This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Timps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about self-care with Lauren Mishkin and Nicole Goodman, who you may know from the ever-growing podcast called Self-Care Club. Also, eagle-eared. It's eagle-eyed, isn't it? We're going to make it new saying. Eagle-eared listeners may recognise the name of this show as well because I recommended them before one of our episodes a little while back. And so it was really fun to get to chat to them in person. It was quite a sort of light-hearted chat about all the various self-care they've trialled in their show and what did and didn't work for them. And before we talk more about our brilliant guests, I've got some background on the theme of self-care from a study of 2,051 US adults aged 18 or older carried out in early May. And that was by Wayne Jonas, partnered with the Harris Poll. And a lot of these findings are really positive. So first from that, most, 64%, reported being focused on their mental health now more than ever. And 44% desired more guidance and support for practicing self-care during the pandemic. So I thought that was a really positive start there to see that such a high percentage of the Americans they surveyed had that clear focus on their mental health and understood like the link and the impact that we're experiencing at the moment, and also are going that step further of wanting to seek out ways that they can practice more self-care.
I guess my first reaction to that is the fact that the people surveyed were American, because Americans in themselves, and I really don't mean to stereotype, I guess I'm generalizing, but are more direct with stuff. So they will speak openly about mental health, about therapy, about this is what I'm going through, or this is what I need, or, you know, it just feels like there is a stigma globally when it comes to mental health, but just the general culture and nature of Americans being quite forthcoming and quite proactive, and less, I mean, stiff upper lip is like such a shit old fashioned saying about Europeans or British people or whatever, but I just feel that, yeah, their whole vibe is just more forthcoming about stuff. So actually, it doesn't surprise me that they're quite open to talking about and seeking out self-care advice. You know what I mean?
Definitely. I think particular areas, whilst the stigma's very much there, there's particular areas of support that are discussed more, like therapy definitely is something that people in the States seem to be more open about, particularly certain states like New York or LA, perhaps, where we have a lot of our guests from. And so perhaps self-care is similar, that self-care is something that is talked about quite widely, I think, here as well, because it's seen as a very accessible way of talking about mental health and the things we can work into our routines to all be a bit more proactive. But it's great to see that, like, in these stats, that link is so clearly identified. I was pleasantly surprised by those numbers, actually. And another one I was very pleased to read was that 80% of the participants intended to be more mindful about regular self-care practices after the pandemic. So there's that, again, the proactiveness of, okay, I want to incorporate these things now. I understand that this is a challenging period and I should be trying to do things to look after myself. You know, just because some parts of our lives we can't participate in anymore doesn't mean we then let everything fall away. We can still have some routine and self-care can be a part of that. And then to see that mindfulness after the pandemic as well of, I want to keep this self-care in my life going forward. Yeah, is nice to read. And two more stats on this. 83% reported that technology was essential in helping maintain social connections, and 53% reported being scared to get mental health care. And that's an interesting stat to contrast, actually, with some of the things we talk about in this episode in terms of concerns around social media and reliance on technology and how that might be sort of forcing out time for actual self-care, which can be replaced by like scrolling through Instagram, and we think that's relaxing, or scrolling through Facebook. Certainly not relaxing for me to be on Facebook. And so nice to see a stat that's highlighting that there is the benefits for social connection in the pandemic with technology, but perhaps it's about having conversations and stuff that's more similar to the face-to-face maybe we're missing, as opposed to more time on social media, which maybe is not what we're missing about pre-pandemic.
Yes, I agree, Bobby. I think we've always said on the show there is upsides to social media, because those who are isolated or feel perhaps different from others, from their peers, or especially for young people, where you can connect with people from all over the world that may have similar interests and really find some benefit in that. And we do talk positively about that. However, I guess we do also talk a lot about social media and the negative impact of social media. So yeah, great stat to recognise, because when you first read that out, I actually thought, well, I don't use social media at all for any form of kind of self-care, or it's not something that, I mean, I do use social media, but I know when I'm using it and what I'm using it for. But then I thought, but then you do pick up the phone and call your mum, your friend when you need to, and you need to talk to somebody and feel supported, and the phone is technology, isn't it? So I totally agree with that stat, and can really see the benefit in all technology if used correctly. I guess it's about how you use it that is the key thing here.
And for a nerdy fact about tech, actually, that is where sometimes it's a little bit weird talking about this distinction, because the term social media has evolved. So when social networks were new, social media was considered any technology you use to communicate. So that would include speaking on the phone, that would include sending someone an email. And yet we don't think of that as being social media at all anymore. We think specifically social networks. But I guess that distinction is important, because this stat is talking about technology is the word they use. And I guess, like you say, within that, we can think about the different ways of communicating and being conscious of which are or aren't doing us good. And then the final stat is a bit more of a serious one, where 55% of people reported being scared to get healthcare during the pandemic. And that's something we talked about a lot, particularly at the beginning of the first lockdown. But I wanted to highlight that again, because I think it's worth reminding ourselves that that fear is still ongoing. You know, this is the start of May. This survey took place where much of the US was already reopening and lifting a lot of restrictions. But it is understandable that a lot of people are still feeling that fear. But healthcare providers are also aware of that. So it's something that you can get in touch with your GP's practice or wherever you're getting support and talk that through with them, because you won't be the first person to have that conversation about, okay, is it safe? You know, what are the protocols in place? And healthcare providers will be all too ready to answer those questions. But yeah, that one in particular does hit home, particularly when one thing that I think hasn't really been talked about much in the pandemic is how vulnerable certain mental illnesses can make you. You know, so often when people talk about vulnerable groups, it isn't mentioned that if you're dealing with an eating disorder to an extent where it's affecting your immune system, or even ongoing anxiety can do the same, then that can put you more at risk. So whether it's mental health or physical health, I can see, you know, there are understandable concerns there, but we still need to get the help.
Yeah, you're right, Bob. We definitely do. I think it's also worth pointing out there, you know, in my family and wider, we've got quite a few individuals who have actually become more anxious because they have sought out help and are now waiting for treatment. So encouraging them, or you know, our listeners now, to really, you know, enjoy this episode and think about what you can do to improve your practices around self-care can be really important during this time because of that reason as well.
For sure. It is a really challenging time. You know, we understand the pressures health services are under, but it's one of those things where they weren't without pressure before. You know, so even if you might be second guessing, like, do I get in touch? the answer is still yes. You know, the medical professionals are well prepped to give you an idea of what like waiting times might be, what kind of support is available, and that's what they're there for. You know, even though they're busy, they are there to support you however they can, even when they have a lot going on, like at the moment.
Yeah.
So really interesting statistics. I like to have all the percentages where we can, particularly with these, see how much understanding of mental health and the need to look after ourselves is growing. And that's something that very much our guests are a part of as well, with their podcast Self Care Club. And they'll tell you all about that if you're not familiar in the episode, about all the kinds of, all the really extensive range of self-care practices they've tried out. And so it was really lovely to talk this all through, when so often we feel time stretched and that it's difficult to fit self-care into our lives, even though, as we talk about in the episode, a lot of it should be stuff we're doing anyway, like going for walks, spending time in nature. But whether it's our job or other commitments, we can find it so difficult to make the time. And so Lauren and Nicole are brilliant in terms of that perspective of how do you fit it in with a family, with work, with a podcast, all these other commitments. So enjoy this episode with the wonderful women behind Self Care Club in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. As someone who has wanted to try out weighted blankets for a while, I'm so delighted to be partnering with Remi Sleep. Their premium weighted blankets are proven to help you fall asleep faster, for longer, and even ease some symptoms of anxiety.
And when we're experiencing stress or anxiety, it's common for our fight or flight response to kick in, with our heart rate rising in preparation to defend ourselves or flee. Whereas the pressure on your body created by a weighted blanket activates your parasympathetic nervous system, got it out, which can lower your heart rate back to more normal levels, enabling a greater feeling of calm.
For sure. And having tried out Remi's 6K lounger blanket for myself, I can confirm it creates that feeling similar to being hugged, which is so reassuring. I know the science behind it, but it also just feels very cozy. Plus, this particular one is part of their summer collection, so it's great at keeping me cool even during these hot nights we're experiencing. In fact, I slept under it last night.
And I do have to say, Bob, it looks amazing. I mean, I didn't sleep under it with you, but you showed me on video. And I just love it. I love the navy, chunky-ness of it. I just love the way it looks too. So you can try a Remi blanket out for yourself, risk-free, with their 100-night trial, including free delivery and returns. This covers their wide range of sizes, weights and colours.
Plus, as usual, you can get an exclusive discount as one of our listeners of 15% off at remisleep.com with code MENTAL15. That's remysleep.com with code MENTAL15. You'll even get free next day delivery. Yeah. So to start off with, can each of you, one by one, if that's okay, tell me why self-care, of all the areas of mental health, why was that the one part that you thought, this is for me, and yes, a podcast about it?
Well, we were chatting over coffee one day, and in complete truth, we were having a little moan about how self-care had become another job, and it was adding to our mental load of just another thing to do. So what we wanted to do was simplify self-care, because self-care is so important for your mental health, your physical health. For every part of your well-being, you need to look after yourselves. And so we wanted to find a way, because we both work with women and have done all our adult lives, we wanted to find a way where women could really take care of themselves, feel good about themselves, do something that makes them smile in a way that doesn't overwhelm them. And that's kind of the start of how the Self Care Club was born.
So it sounds like it'll be very similar for you then, Lauren.
Yeah, exactly the same. I think that women are coerced into spending a lot of money and time and effort on a lot of stuff that is useless most of the time. And also, we're busy working, we're busy being mums, we're busy having a life. So we sort of took it upon ourselves to be the testers, the experimenters, and to test everything out individually, and to be really blunt and honest about what is going to work And what's just a waste of your time? Because who's got the time to be wasting on things that are rubbish?
Which I love as a concept, that you were like, I don't have time for this thing. I don't have time for working it out.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it anyway on behalf of other women. And if that doesn't just represent your approach to your work.
Taking one for the team being the whole of womankind.
Oh, I love that. And I think the whole term of self-care can be very confused because they think it's suddenly this big, massive thing. But self-care can be anything that makes you feel better in that moment. And your self-care changes every day. So what I need today for my self-care, what's going to make me smile today versus what's going to make me smile next week or tomorrow is going to be different because we're ever changing. Our moods are always different. So for me and for Lauren, self-care is about what brings a smile to your face. And, you know, that could be anything from going to bed, having a rest, practicing a bit of gratitude, or hugging a tree. It doesn't really matter what it is. And it doesn't have to be expensive, and it doesn't have to take up a lot of time. So they're the things that we're really passionate about, is finding the practices that actually cost nothing and take up no extra time so that women will take that time to invest in themselves.
Yeah. I love that. And I also love that definition of it and what you were saying, Lauren, about how so often it's driven to be financial. Like, we're so marketed self-care nowadays that so many people therefore find themselves thinking it's a particular product as opposed to it's actually behaviours and looking after ourselves, but in a more conscious way.
Yeah. And self-care should not be exclusive. You know, it's not for a set type of person. It's not just for the white middle class. Self-care is for everybody. Men, women, rich, poor, young, old, everybody. Everybody can practice kindness. Everybody can practice gratitude. Everyone can go and hug a tree. Everyone can go and stand barefoot in a park. You know, it doesn't have to be about having a 300-pound facial. That's what we love about it.
Yeah. And I like that open approach to it, where you're just going in and trying to stay open-minded to all these different things, because you've really tested. I've made a list of some of them. There's all sorts. You did ASMR, journaling, exercise, classical music, sleep hygiene, pelvic floor training, couch to 5K, just a few of them.
Yeah. Laura's not always so open-minded.
I don't like the physical tasks because I just don't like them so much. And the mental ones, Nicole normally she chooses the mental challenges, and I go, oh, no. And then I end up loving them every time.
So she doesn't like the physical ones and she doesn't like the mental ones. Which ones do you like?
None of them. All of them.
But this is the point, right, that it just varies so much. And you guys are examples of that, where you can go in and say, you know what, actually, this isn't the one that I thought I would like. And yet I do.
Yes.
And it's about sort of trying that out and putting the effort in. And even just that, you know, this is where it kind of almost gets complicated, because even just looking for good self-care, we could describe as self-care. It can be any act where you're trying to look after yourself. And that's where sometimes, we were saying off mic, it can be a bit surreal, because a lot of these activities, like sleeping, are things that we 100% should be doing anyway. But we've come to a point where I don't know whether it's that we've so like micromanaged our lives, or we've got so much product marketed at us, or so much expectations of how to be the perfect person or mother or employee, whatever else, that we then have to engineer in the stuff we should have been doing anyway, because we've filled our life.
Our basic needs.
Mm.
Yeah. Our basic needs are not really being met. We're not giving ourselves permission to stop and have a good night's sleep. Just for an example, we're not giving ourselves permission to stop and think about, what is it I want to eat today for lunch? We're not giving ourselves the permission to just look after ourselves in the most fundamental way. And we've moved so far away from that we now have to teach ourselves how to be in the present moment. We have to teach ourselves how to sleep, how to rest, how to stop. All these things that are incremental to our well-being.
And parent ourselves. We had to do a week of digital detoxing because we're grown adults who don't know how to monitor our own time on a screen. It's things like that that should be pretty basic, but aren't.
Yeah. Yeah. I hated that one.
I know you did.
I think I would struggle.
I got really moody about it, because really what I found about that is, and Lauren was adamant that I was somehow addicted to social media, and we had a bit of an argument about it, but that's fine. That's half of what the show's about. Our lives are not set up to not be on the phone. That's what was so interesting about it. It wasn't me scrolling through Instagram or Facebook that I missed. It was the, when I got in the car, I couldn't use my Waze, or I couldn't pay for my parking. I couldn't pay for a coffee, because as much as you want to get off the phone, as much as I wanted to stay off the phone for a week, I literally couldn't run my life. And that just put me in a bad mood.
And then I accidentally, genuinely left my phone at my friend's house. And I was seeing her the next day anyway. So I had like 18 hours without it. And Nicole was going mad because she thought I was like really over-egging the pudding there and like completely switching off. And the truth was, I just left it at someone else's house. But I mean, she's like, oh my God, I still can't get hold of her. It's been like 16 hours.
I was sending her texts like, okay, you've made your point. Turn on your phone now. I get it. It's enough.
I would find that stressful, though. And I guess this speaks to how ingrained technology is in our psychology now.
Yes.
Where for me, I think I could do the leaving it for 16 hours, but I couldn't do it by accident. I would probably want to have some kind of like last check of everything, as if that somehow makes me feel more secure. But that is how we've become so reliant on these devices.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the problem is that when you step away, because I did turn it off for like 14 hours or however long, when you turn it back on, you are inundated with notifications. So I then sat there for an hour and a half trying to catch up with everything. It would have been school emails, WhatsApps from my friends, or notifications off Instagram, or work emails. That was just 14 hours off, and it was so overwhelming. And so what I then discovered was, you've got no chance of staying off this phone. If you want to live in the real world, in the current way in which we all live, and you want to stay relevant and you want to stay up to date with what's going on, you have to be on a phone. And I found that really depressing.
Yeah, it is depressing. I often live in a fantasy where Instagram and Facebook become illegal and everyone in the whole world has to get rid of it forever. And I think I'd feel such a deep relief. I think lots of people would.
I think that's true. Yeah. But then I guess we'd be pressured onto TikTok or something, which I don't think I would prefer.
No.
I can't even start with any other platform. It's just too much.
I think I've aged out and I'm fine with that. TikTok
I'm
is not for me.
I'm also okay with that. I've never been on it and I'm not going to start now.
But you know what, this is interesting in particular to me, though, that so often there can be this common narrative that the social media is the problem. And I think that can be somewhat limiting, where we can want to blame something in a straightforward way.
Yes.
We want to be able to say, well, if Facebook had like tighter regulations on fake news, it wouldn't be damaging people's mental health as much. Or if, I don't know, Twitter wasn't letting young kids on there, they were more stringent. Because the last time I checked, you actually had to be 18 to even have a Twitter account. And I don't know if that's ever been regulated. And so we can look at it in that way. But then ultimately, it's people behind this. You know, there's only so much that the people at the top are doing. Yes, there are harmful elements to the technology, but there's also people acting out when they feel they have a degree of anonymity, or bullying moving online because a bully could access somebody wherever they are in the world. You know, there's these elements which are human and we can all have a part in solving. And so I agree, it's difficult that we're in this place where we can't just be like, okay, no more phone. But maybe we have to find those difficult compromises of, okay, for me, it's been no more Facebook. But then there's other parts of my phone I have kept.
What's interesting for me is that we are the first generation of parents who are dealing with children, dealing with social media. So in a way, you know, our parents had a much easier time parenting us, but we've got no idea how to do this because we don't know the repercussions of this in 20, 30 years' time. So we're kind of the first. It's tough. I've got a 17-year-old who's chosen not to be on social media. He loves it. That's his choice. My middle son, who's 15, you know, really enjoys it. And I have sons, so I think I'm also dealing with different issues than Nicole, who's got daughters. And it's something that I don't think as parents you're actually educated on enough or very much at all.
Right. Well, it's a different world. You know, Facebook, when I got it the first time, was just me playing Farmville and sending my friends sheep. It's a whole different world what kids are dealing with now.
Yeah, it is.
I wish it stayed that way. Yeah. I wish it stayed that way.
I had a great farm.
And, you know, if it affects... And if it affects our mental health, which it does, but I'm 44 and I know when I'm scrolling through Instagram and it's making me feel bad, that I know that I can take myself off. And I watch my 13-year-old doing it through Snapchat or TikTok and I can see she's getting sort of really ingrained in this phone. And I say, just put the phone down. But she's so in that addictive state, she kind of can't get herself out of it. And listen, I don't know what the answer is, but I do know that it isn't in a phone. And I know it is about presence and self-care and just finding that place within yourself that you can trust and that you can always come back to, because it's never external. And I think all the external influences that are around, not just for our children, but for us as well, can be very toxic if we don't watch what we're taking in.
But a lot of that comes with age. And I think by the time you get to your 40s, you are quite settled in who you are and you understand that photos on Instagram are curated and you don't sit there thinking, I wish I looked like that. I wish my hair was like that. If I looked like that, I'd be happier. You know, it's easier, I think, when you know yourself than when you're a kid and you have all those insecurities.
Yes, of course.
I think, yeah, and, you know.
For sure. But the good news about your work is it can also come from practice. You know, people going out there and looking for self-care, looking for ways to find self-worth in things other than the digital can be something we can practice at any age. So what sort of things have you tested? Have you found the most beneficial?
Go on, Lauren, what have you found the most beneficial?
I think, I mean, we come back to this every time because we get asked this a lot, but it was one of our very first shows and it was a show on gratitude, which, you know, in the round, it doesn't sound like a big deal, but it was really quite transformative. I really enjoyed that one. Yeah. And our week of no complaining as well was a great week.
So what we did with the no complaining, and we still practice it now, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
So I'm a woman's coach. So I work on these kind of things a lot and I reframe a lot of stuff with my clients. And a complaint is an unsaid request. That is all a complaint is. So rather than, you know, me moaning at my husband for not doing the dishes or doing them in the way that I don't want him to, what is it I want? What is it I want? I want him to do the dishes. I want him to do them so that they dry properly and that they're just done. And then it's just something I don't have to do. So rather than me going, you haven't done the dishes in the complaint, we turn it around. And there was a 4-step program of how to say what it is you want. And it was just a completely different communication style. So it would go along the lines of, I've noticed that when you do the dishes, you put the pots the wrong way up so that they don't drip out. What I would really like is if you could just turn them round and then they could drip and dry and then it's all put away. And that would make me feel so much better. Thank you so much. Rather than going, you haven't done the bloody dishes and I've told you a million times not to put them that way, which obviously is such a default mode. Well, yeah. The first time I tried it, and obviously, as we went through the week, we were doing bigger and bigger requests. And I've given it something that is a very, you know, a very little example. But he turned around to me and he goes, okay, no problem. And just did it.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh my God, this is like a magic wand. So
it was almost a miracle, wasn't it? How effective it was.
It was so effective. So anyone listening now would really say, whatever it is that you're complaining about in that moment, just ask yourself the question of what is it I want right now? What is the unsaid request? And that, from that, is just so transformative.
Yeah. And it can just be as simple as that. You know, when you were describing like the language you used, I was thinking, yes, a lot of it is just removing you from the start of the sentence, because so often that would be the default. And then somebody hears that and they're like, what? I was just watching the TV or doing whatever they were doing. I wasn't doing anything to you right now. And so their brain automatically goes into defense mode of, it's not me. You're the one that's come and shouting, you know, and it's very difficult then to stay rational when you're at that level of emotion. And actually what you really want to get out of it is not to win an argument, is for support with the dishes.
Yeah.
So everyone wins.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
The other thing that I have found really, really powerful, one of the practices we did was grounding. We did a week of grounding. It's one of our more recent shows where you basically just stand on the earth with your bare feet. You can go for a swim. It's just connecting you back to nature. And our lifestyles aren't really set up to be outdoors. And I found that so powerful. I woke up one morning with a raging hangover and I went outside into my garden and I stood, Lauren didn't quite believe me, but I swear to God, this is true, God's honest truth. I stood in my garden for 10 minutes. I just walked around on the grass. I came back in and my hangover had lifted. It was unbelievable.
Wow. Yeah, I love that. And it's funny, all these things where it's just that stuff we should surely be doing anyway. You know, that's where we historically would have been, but we've put ourselves in metal boxes.
Yeah, we did a week of orb walking, which was, you know, taking a walk, but rather than taking a walk and being on your phone, taking a walk and actually noticing what's around you. Just walk with awe. Notice, listen to the birds, look at the plants, watch where you're going, say hi to people who pass you. And that was a great week. I mean, that's all anyone did in lockdown. So it was, you know, it was very handy. But it was a it was a whole episode in how to just be, how to walk and be with nature. And it was great. I loved that week. And the tree hugging was a mad week. We get to try out all this stuff, thinking a bit reluctant to try some of this stuff, and it turns out to be great fun. We actually both quite like the tree hugging in the end, didn't we?
I do occasionally go and hug a tree. Still, I get an urge.
I don't. There,
and I do. I do. And my friend was really stressed out one day and we were going for a walk and I said, you know what? Pick a tree. Just look at one tree that you're really drawn to. And she looked at me like I'd basically lost the plot. I said, just trust me. I said, wrap your arms around this tree and just be here with the tree. And she totally went with it. And she said, I feel so much better. Look, it's not a cure for all, but in that moment, it does relieve something. If you're feeling very stressed, I would say that the first stop is get out in nature. I think that is so powerful and important for mental health.
Yeah. And for me, it's often these ways that we can just step out of whatever process we're in. If we're getting stressed, there's a cause and effect there. There's a ramping up effect that can happen. And so something that breaks your routine could be simple enough to deactivate that. Yes. So go, go hug the tree. I do it sometimes when I'm out for walks. And the nice thing about this country is that people look away and pretend you're not there. So,
that is a very good point.
We did a week of kindness, random small acts of kindness. And I went into the supermarket and I bought a bunch of flowers to give to someone in the supermarket, and it just backfired so spectacularly.
A stranger, a complete stranger.
Because, you know, in London, you go and buy a stranger a bunch of flowers, they're like, is it a scam? Is there someone else on the side trying to mug me? What do you want? They were, and it was this elderly couple, and they were so suspicious of me, they could barely say thank you because they couldn't quite cope with this happening.
I'm not surprised. I mean, you think about it. Someone comes up to you in a supermarket and just hands you a bunch of flowers and says, I want to give this to you because I just want to do one kind thing.
Yeah.
You think, what?
So it was quite it was quite an uncomfortable week that week.
Played a good podcast though.
It did.
I'm trying to think what I'd do. I think I might ask to see the receipt. I might wonder if you've actually paid for them or if you're just handing me a bit of stock in the shop.
Problem, but that I went through the checkout and bought them, and then I realized I had to go back in to give them to this couple, and I had to find the checkout lady and say, listen, I have paid, but I'm giving them to this couple. Please, when they get to the checkout, don't make them pay, because that defeats the whole purpose of the flowers. And I got all stressed. She was like, darling, I saw what you did, don't worry, we're not going to make them pay for it. But yeah, I think I would like to try and do that again a little more elegantly next time. It was
It's attractive if you carry it off. You know, how many movies are there where someone just pays for a random table's drinks and they always have such suave to it? And I don't know if I can quite pull that off.
Yes. But someone did buy Lauren a loaf of bread, didn't they, when we were in lockdown?
They did.
And so Lauren was in, well, you tell the story, Lauren.
Oh, there was a huge, huge queue outside this bread shop on a Friday morning. And, you know, because everyone was in lockdown, so we all started chatting and we were just laughing because it was like half an hour because one old lady was taking 45 minutes to do her shopping in this bakery. And the woman in front of her said, I only came here for a bloody loaf of bread. And the woman in front went in to do her shopping, came out, gave me a loaf and said, there you go, darling, have a lovely day. I said, I haven't got any money, or you know, I've only got my card. And she went, it's for you. It's for you. And it kind of, you know, it was like it got repaid. The kindness got repaid, which was really, was really sweet.
The one thing that you said that I found really fascinating was that it's much easier, or we slip into giving kindness out. But when it comes to receiving kindness, I think that's much harder. And actually, that's something that we both took away from Kindness Week, that it's really important to be able to receive those acts of kindness as well as to give. Mm. And so in that moment when that woman gave you the bread, you said, I learned from that week in kindness to also receive it. So I just took it graciously.
Yeah, well, that's it. You got to see firsthand how wonderful that experience can be from both sides.
Yeah. It was a good week.
I wonder if this is part of the reason why sometimes people can be kind of cynical around self-care, because we talk about some of these things and they sound so straightforward that you then wonder, can they really have that big an effect on my mental health? But actually, yes, the answer is yes.
They really can. And we, you know, we blind test it. So when Nicole and I take the practice, we test it individually. We don't speak about it. We speak every day, but we don't speak about how we're finding the practice, so that when we come back in to record that week's session, we don't know how the other has got along. And it's very interesting because we feel very differently about those things. We come at things from such opposing angles. But the kind of nuggets that we take from a lot of these practices are often the same, the benefits we reap.
And I think most of the practices that we've done that have been the most powerful have all cost nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think there's a lot to be said for that.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And it's a lot of these things, their connection, their slowing down, their being present, you know, all these things that we can so easily lose. And actually, that's a way to demystify things that can seem complicated around self-care. Like often people will jump to say, oh, meditation and mindfulness. And for a lot of people, we still don't know how that fits into our day-to-day. You know, whether it's that we need to schedule time or whether that's something we should be doing as we go along. And for me, when I found out you could do food meditation, that helped it click in with me.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, so you can basically find guided meditations online that'll teach you how to do it. And so you take, it's usually quite a simple food. So they like to do it with fruit a lot. And so something like an orange is relatively complex to kind of look at and take apart. And so you just put all your concentration on that. And for a lot of people, that's more accessible than, you know, focusing on the breath coming in and out. It's something that
I like, that
focusing on your food feels a bit more organic to some people.
Yes.
And yet it's quite crazy to think, oh yeah, we are fully used to having meals in front of the telly or whilst on the go and on the phone, all these things where then, you know, someone asked me the next day, what did you have for dinner? And I don't remember. We've lost that. And so trying to find those simple ways to connect. The other one I try and do is not have your phone be the default in a lot of social situations. So if you get to a bus stop and you need to wait, is there something else you can do rather than just like whip out your phone? Because often you're not even doing something. You're just scrolling through the different pages of your homepage, or you're like refreshing your emails that you don't really want to look at. And I never reply to emails on my phone. So why am I doing it?
Yeah, I never reply to emails.
It's a habit.
Full stop.
I think it's quite important as well to not feel like you should be practicing a form of self-care that doesn't speak to you. So we did.
Then that's not self-care, is it?
It's not.
That's just the opposite.
We did meditation, and you know, we both gave it a really good go, and it wasn't for me. It didn't resonate for me. So it's not something that I'm going to choose to spend the very few hours of spare time I have doing out of a feeling of guilt, or I should, or this is what everyone else is doing. I think you have to find the things that genuinely make you feel better or uplift you, or, you know, are helping you feel less anxious, less stressed, are bringing you joy, because that's the whole point of self-care. It's not a punishment. It's to enhance your life.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, well, that's it. You don't want it to just turn into another task and then you beat yourself up mentally if you don't complete that task you didn't really want to do. And yet, at the same time, that kind of brings us on to another misconception around self-care. So I imagine it sometimes like a spectrum. If we've got the buy this product and you'll be sorted at the extreme one end, then maybe the other end is where it's the stuff that's so much deeper, where it's like doing work on ourselves. So maybe that's going to counselling. Maybe that's having a difficult conversation with a family member we need to. Doing things practically for our mental health, like going to an AA group or other things to get us out of dangerous cycles. And that is still included in self-care. And yet that can be the stuff that's forgotten about because we're sort of attracted to the idea that we just buy a product or we do 10 minutes of meditation a day. But that's not the full story. So what's it been like exploring those deeper elements as well?
Because we live our practices for a week, something like going to counselling or therapy is not something that we could fulfil in a week and then report back on. It's a much longer term goal. So we, you know, we're very aware that these much bigger issues apply, but we're also not therapists or counsellors. So we have to be mindful of staying in our lane. But if it's anything that we feel is a big issue, for example, we did 3 special shows over Mental Health Awareness Week, and we threw it back to our listeners to say, you know, we're lay people, but we obviously have people in our lives who have really struggled with their mental health, and there has been, you know, suicide attempts and all sorts of stuff. We want to know what's helped you when you've been in a bad place, and also tips for helping others. So we kind of threw it back to our listeners, and that was brilliant because it was a peer-to-peer support show. So we can't pretend to be experts and fixing the deeper issues, but we can learn from other people who are going through it and who have also helped others. And that was a great week for us. I think we learned a lot that week.
Mm-hmm. We did.
Yeah,
we did. And also supporting the loved ones in your life that are struggling can also take its toll on you. And that's something that we covered as well. And I don't think that doesn't get a lot of conversation. I don't hear a lot of conversation around that because I think people feel guilty if they feel tired or they feel like they don't want to pick up that phone to someone that's having a hard time because you want to be there and you want to be supported. But sometimes you're not in the right headspace yourself. And so we talked about that through Mental Health Awareness Week because that is also a really vital part that you have to, in order to support the people that you love that may be struggling, you have to look after yourself because you can't support anybody from a place of depletion. You just can't.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important one. And that, I guess, covers sort of what I was saying, is finding these deeper questions of, okay, I've got this ongoing issue. And sometimes we have to do things that are active and are uncomfortable, but that in itself is self-care because we're looking out for our own health.
Absolutely.
And so, for example,
absolutely,
a recent bit of advice I gave to a friend was, they were struggling with, you know, in lockdown, we've all been a lot more digital with our communications and they've got someone in their life who's really been struggling a lot at the moment. And it's starting to feel like they're a sort of on-call support network where whenever this person's calling them, they're really worried of, okay, what's the issue going to be today? How long might we be on the phone? I don't know if I can take this call, but equally, I don't want to not take it and it's something really worrying. And then it was also getting into a place where the communication was becoming so regular that then a lot of it was just like, I'm going for a walk and I fancied a chat. And so they found themselves very quickly being on the phone, being that supportive friend a lot of hours every week, and then it was draining them. And
yes.
And this comes back to boundaries, right? So that's another example we could use.
Yeah.
And it's not always comfortable, but sometimes it can be as simple as maybe realign things. So rather than it just being a phone call whenever, you plan the phone calls. You text ahead and it might be a little bit clunky to start off with. But if you get into the habit of it, then that way you're not going to have the phone call at a weird hour when you're not sure if you can take it. And
we came into that situation actually because during our mental health week, we both had a situation where we were feeling a little overwrought and a little depleted.
Yes.
And separately, without telling each other, we both found ourselves in situations where we chose ourselves over the other person and we both felt guilty. And terrible. It was very hard, but we kept the boundary. And then we were quite proud of each other for having done
yes.
that. Because it and was also, important.
It was important. And we were depleted from these particular people who are going through a difficult time. And the therapist, our resident therapist, Kate Medlin, said to us, if you can't give to that person in that moment, don't pick up the phone because you're no use to them. That's okay because you are human beings. But perhaps exactly what you said, Bobby, is do it in your own time, in your own space, when you are ready to take that call.
But she also went a step further and said to us, if you are feeling a little bit like you didn't want to take the call, a little bit resentful, a little bit distracted, that resentment, that feeling is going to show up yes. in that phone call, even subconsciously, even if you don't mean it to. So if you don't have that mental space or time or capacity in that moment to have that conversation, text them and say, I'd love to speak to you, but I can't right now. Can we talk tomorrow at 2 o'clock? And be in the right headspace to do it. Because actually, not only are you not serving yourself, but you're not actually serving them. And isn't that the point about being a good friend and being supportive? Is you genuinely want to help. So help when you yeah. are able to, when you're in the right space for it.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And on that note, we'll start wrapping up then with the last thing I wanted to know, which as a fellow podcaster, I have learnt a lot about myself doing this show, at times more than I wanted to, you know, a lot of deep things I've needed to work on. What sort of things have you learned about yourselves?
Oh, there has been loads. I think one of the big ones for me has been to give myself permission to look after myself, give myself permission to sometimes speak up, find my voice a bit more, and just, I guess, stay in my own space. And I think that is something universally that women are dreadful at, because we're always giving to the other person. And actually, what not just the show, but what self-care has taught me is that it is so important for my mental health and my physical health for me to have the permission to just be wherever I am. And wherever I am is just enough. And not try and overstretch myself, overgive, and just be able to be there for myself as I am for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. I think the physical challenges, especially recently, we did a month of exercise, which is something that's huge in Nicole's life. You know, she trains 5-6 days a week, and I don't train at all, ever. I learned a lot about my capabilities, that I'm stronger, my body is stronger than I thought it was. I'm more capable than I thought I was. I think I know myself quite well. I haven't felt revelations in this, but having listened to your podcast, Bobby, the thing that really struck me is what you say at the end, remember you're enough, because that is one of my biggest mantras. And the thing that I wish all parents would say to all their children every single day, you are enough. And I really think if children grow up feeling that, and they are told that, and you believe that, it sets you up in life.
Mm. Well, thank you. Lovely. I appreciate that. And I agree. And I would even add to that, that it's so important for the parents as well. You know, it's such a straightforward way really to imprint that on your kids, as if you can genuinely live that yourself. And for parents in particular, I think we did an episode recently on perfectionism, and there's a whole specific perfectionism that comes around parenting. And so it can be very easy that whatever you're doing, no matter how tired you are, no matter how many hours you're up in the night, you can still feel you're doing it wrong. And that is so yes. opposite to a lot of what we've talked about today. And yet so often you can slip into that, you know, and with your show, you know, of course, you know that so often that is disproportionately on women, that particular yes. area of pressure. And so I love what you're doing. I love that you found some stuff from our show that you appreciate as well. And it's just wonderful that you found this accessible way to demystify self-care, that it's so
Thank
important.
You. Thank you.
And
Thank
yet
you.
So often it's overlooked, and people think it's either way too complicated or way too simple, and it doesn't make sense, but it's vital.
Or selfish. And it's
selfish.
Self-care is not selfish.
But, But by the way, it's also fun and it's supposed to be fun. And we have a great time doing it.
Really,
and we have a laugh and we take the mickey and we don't take it seriously at all. And some of them are much more profound than others. Some of them are really silly, like hugging a tree, but actually really powerful. And it doesn't have to, it doesn't have to take up time. It doesn't have to cost money. And it just needs to put a smile on your face. That's all it needs to do.
For sure. And I've learned a lot listening. One of the things I learned was that ASMR is the thing that you experience when you go to certain mediums that, that trigger that response. I just thought it was like ASMR was the videos or the tapping nails on a table or whatever else. So
it's
I love
the feeling.
Yeah.
The feeling.
It's very weird. I mean, that was just, that was not for me. That was the only practice we've done where I felt I was too old to really understand it.
But it was great fun to explore it though, wasn't it? And learn about it.
Oh my God, we had a great time.
I could tell. Yeah. If the listeners want somewhere to start, that is quite a fun place because not only did, will you learn a lot from it, but also you guys recorded your own ASMR and had a lot of fun clattering around your homes in lockdown.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much for having us, Bubby. It's been really lovely talking to you.
No, of course. And so, yeah, I'd encourage the listeners to go check out your podcast, Self Care Club. Go join that club. And it's out every week. And then you have an extra kind of recap episode as well.
Yeah, we do an epilogue show on a Friday where we have our listeners' feedback and more about how the week went for us.
So it's good, easy listening. It is definitely a lot of humour there. Your dynamic is great. And yeah, thanks for being a guest.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.